Hey, everybody, welcome, and thank you for listening to this episode of Marriage Therapy Radio. My name is Zach Brittle. I'm here with Laura Heck. We started this episode trying to answer a bunch of questions that had come in from you, our listeners, through email and through the internet. We only got through two of them, though. So we are consider this part one. We're going to do part two next week. We have a whole bunch of questions that have come in that we're excited to answer. And so, stay tuned. In this episode, we talk a little bit about a couple more personal angles on the way Laura lives her life with her family of three, a little bit about me and my journey, which was fun to think out loud about. Before we start, I want to make one note, which is that those of you who are looking for a little bit of additional support, maybe haven't quite found the right therapist or workshop, but you know that you want something going on, and also you feel like part of your value set is that you're a Christian couple or that you want a faith-based relationship, I want to point you again toward the Thrive Marriage Lab. It's a 12-month cohort plan with a bunch of other couples that have joined in and who are interested in a similar kind of journey. It's led by experienced marriage counselors. You get live and recorded monthly engagement that's guaranteed to lead to more curiosity, intimacy, and connection. I think it's a pretty great deal. It's led by Chris Bruno, who was on our podcast a while back. I think this is last call. So they're closing registration at the end of March. If you're interested in getting started, I think their cohort is, officially starts in April. And I would just encourage you, if that's something that you're interested in leading into over the next year, go to restory.life/thrive. So it's restory.life/thrive. If you use our code, which is MTR, I think you get $20 off each month, which it's already pretty inexpensive and a great value for folks who are just looking for another way to stay connected to one another and to their faith. Again, it's a 12-month cohort that you should look into if you haven't already. But for now, we'll go ahead and get back to your questions. Again, this is these are questions that have come in from you. Laura and I enjoyed answering them. This is a very cool conversation. Stick around.
Oh my gosh, things are happening. I'm watching people ride their bikes right now outside.
That's exciting. Yeah.
It is exciting. And I'm having that great contemplation. Do you take your bike off the trainer because it's nice outside and ride it? Or do you just bite the bullet because it's going to, like, the weather's going to turn here in Bend? It's like every 30 minutes we have a different storm coming through. Yeah, it is a false.
But today's spring. Spring is today.
Are you sure it's today?
March 21st. Isn't that right?
Okay. I have no idea.
This is the day that you can balance an egg on the end. You can set an egg up on and it should stand up on your floor.
Can you do that experiment on the floor?
I don't know. If you have an egg and you balance it on this day, it will stand up on its end. I think something. You should try that experiment. Hold on.
Never heard that before, but I will experiment. Okay.
Yeah.
Today we're doing an AMA, which is
By the way, if you're listening
anything.
To this podcast after today, it won't work. Don't even try it. Like you're listening to this, but you don't know what today is because today is just today for you. But today is March 21st for us.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Do you listen when do you listen to your podcasts? I'm just wondering, because I know that we on social media, we gave our three favorite podcasts, which people didn't have a whole lot to say, which I was a little surprised because I wanted to know what other people's favorite podcasts are. But when do you listen to your podcasts?
Usually when I'm doing yard work or like kind of just futzing around the kitchen or the house, like I don't have other like blank. I don't have like real blank swaths in my day to listen to stuff. And my commute's only 8 minutes. So that's like useless for me in terms of turning something on. But I'm coming to see you tomorrow. I'll probably listen to something tomorrow on the plane.
Yeah. What time is your flight? Listen to leave.
4:45.
4:45. And you get here at what time? 5:45.
Yeah.
So we need to go straight to dinner. Essentially.
We're having dinner.
Well, we need to eat
dinner
right?
Saturday.
Well, we can go to dinner on Saturday. Dinner,
or you can just make me dinner. Or we can go to dinner.
I've been on the struggle bus. So, we've been doing like these boxed meals, meal kits. Yeah. We stopped doing that because we were in transition and we travel a lot. There's like a lot of reasons, but I can tell you that if there is not a meal kit in my fridge, my husband will not cook. He just I have been a little bit of like a standstill where it's maybe 6 o'clock. Uh-huh. Everyone's stomachs are grumbling. Everyone's standing around in the kitchen and I'm just sort of sitting there going, how long will it take until Ryan opens the refrigerator and decides he's going to make dinner tonight? And I don't, I will say I don't blame him because that is my department. I have always been the one who prepares meals. It's my lane
in our house. Yeah.
Yeah. We call it department. I'm head of food. And, I just sort of in my mind thought, well, I'm working and he's not, so he needs to take over. But I did not communicate that to him. And, so it's not fair, but I am also sometimes pretty snarky and just want to see how long it'll take. And I'll tell you, it takes until about 6:05 before he looks at me and turns to Holden and says, you want to go out for sushi tonight? So that's his solution. We've had a lot of food that we've been consuming from the restaurants locally, and I do not like it. My waist does not like it either. Anyway,
well,
I will prepare you something.
We should go to dinner. We don't have to, whatever. It doesn't matter. Like, we'll be fine. We have to sit in front of our computers though and make sure that we're on track to do the thing we're supposed to do. Because otherwise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Zach's coming down here.
You just need to be aware of your bedtime because I'll stay up until 11 or 12, but yeah. So,
which I'm fine with you staying up.
And then we go to dinner.
Yes.
But if we get there at 6 and then we go to dinner and then I come home, we come home and we do the thing and then you try to go to bed at 8:30, I might have some thoughts about that.
Yes. Okay. So we should probably combine dinner and work so that I can go to bed by 8:30
to your house to arrive there the same time that we arrive there.
Nope. Nope. I will prepare something lovely and it'll be sitting in my kitchen waiting for you, but we are going out to eat on Saturday.
That's
just
exciting.
The two of us. Yeah. That is exciting.
I think we should invite, some people. I think we should
invite hot mom friends.
Yeah, totally.
That think you're a celebrity and gush on you.
I'll just hold court for like a couple hours and that'll be
fun. What does that mean? Hold court.
It means I'll just sit there like on a little throne and they could just all ask me questions and like
feed you
praise
grapes.
Me and like tell me things. Yeah. And feed me grapes.
Okay. I will ask if any of my hot mom friends would like to spend an evening with me while you hold court
you
in their presence.
It off. You should auction
good
it off.
Lord.
And see, like raffle
okay.
it.
Okay. That's great. So glad you feel so high about it. So Zach sends me a text and he said, we should go get those foot massages.
That is a good idea.
I was like, okay, so now I'm making dinner for you Friday night. I'm going to book your spa experience. Perfect. I'm going to order up a couple of hot babes to fan you. And
it's my kind of weekend.
Yeah. So that is what Zach's coming into in Bend, Oregon. This is why it's the most popular place to vacation here in Oregon. Anyway, we have a pedicure on Saturday, so that's exciting.
Yeah, we do. I'm excited about it. Anyway, we're answering a bunch of questions today because we have questions that came in from the internet. We want to answer them. But first, I wanted to tell you this story. I don't think I've told you this one yet about new clients that have come in. They're not actually new. I've had them before. They were here before COVID. Do you have these people who like they talked to you before COVID and now they're back?
Yeah. I mean, I have people that are kind of repeat offenders. They come back and I get to have like an ongoing relationship with them where they're like, hi, we're back. We have another child. Yeah. I'm like, oh, welcome. Yeah.
Well, what I've been noticing is that in most of those cases, they're really consistent with what we often talk about with Dr. Gottman's research, which is this idea that people have perpetual problems that they kind of, the things that they were struggling with before, like 3 or 4 years ago, they're still struggling with.
Yeah.
But this was like a total curveball. This couple came in and they were fine. It was nice to catch up and they had some of the same stuff going on, but she was like super agitated because he could not stop singing Bare Naked Ladies lyrics. That was like her main complaint. Yeah.
Okay.
And I was fascinated, totally fascinated because I like this band and I was listening. So I asked him, I said, how long has this been going on? And he said, it's been.
minutes.
Yeah, no, that's Rent,
amazing.
But
yeah, I know that's Rent. I just was singing another song with a time frame. That's
it's
good.
Been
you really
1 week.
1 week since you looked. Wait, 1 week since you looked at me.
I don't know. That's yeah.
Something.
Oh, I've been working on that one for a while. Hope
that
you
was
guys
a
enjoyed
good,
it.
That was really good. I always get a little nervous when you're like, I have a story about a couple that I want to tell you. I'm like, okay, let's go ahead and blow your.
My commitment to confidentiality.
Exactly.
funny story. So my husband left with my son on a road trip to Pebble Beach 4 days ago, and we have just been reunited, and I'm getting ready in the bathroom here in Carmel, searching through his toiletry bag for toothpaste, and wouldn't you know it, there is my missing OneSkin moisturizer. That sneaky turtle. I have always suspected that he's been using my favorite skincare, but I've never actually seen him apply it. So there you have it, folks. OneSkin isn't just for the lady who wants to turn back time and simplify their skincare regimen. It's for the gentleman as well. OneSkin was founded by four PhDs dedicated to skin longevity, and their topical supplements make it easy to help your skin stay younger and healthier without all of those extra steps. So what is the secret? OneSkin's proprietary OS1 peptide. It is the first ingredient scientifically proven to reduce the buildup of senescent cells, those notorious zombie cells that contribute to skin aging. So fewer zombie cells means healthier, younger looking skin with fewer lines and wrinkles, reduced age spots, and a stronger natural barrier. So that's something especially important this time of year. OneSkin is more than just skincare. It's about skin longevity. It's targeting the root causes of aging to help you look and feel your very best at every age. So get started today with 15% off using your code MTR at oneskin.co with code MTR. And after you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. So please support our show. Tell them that we sent you. It's time to expect more from your skincare routine. Invest in the health of your skin with OneSkin.
So we're doing an AMA, which means that maybe some of these questions might pertain to marriage. Maybe they are completely out of left field. But yes, Zach is raising his hand. Gentleman in the back. Yes?
Well, I don't want to interrupt you, but I did. There was two things I wanted to say today.
But why don't you want to interrupt me is the good question.
Because
the boss told you not to. The boss said...
I gave her a talking to, too, by the way.
The feedback like, is that people
it,
don't like it.
Like, yeah. We understand. But I told
her
the truth,
which was... Laura.
Which was that we've grown a lot. Like, we're actually... people might think we haven't, but I think we're actually... I think when we taught last week, we crushed it. I think we did an amazing job of, like, taking care of each other. Do you agree?
I can't even remember last week, to be perfectly honest.
Oh. When we did the 7 principles training for those people, and we were like... I thought we were on fire. Anyway, I'm
feeling
glad
you.
Confident
yeah,
about
we didn't
this
really have like a moment debrief where we chatted after the fact. But
okay, but this is actually kind of serious. The second thing that I wanted to talk about.
Okay.
The first one I wanted to tell my bare naked ladies joke, but I have been trying something that I want to propose to people to try because it's changed my life, and it's this: when I am aware that I am stressed out or that I am having a hard time falling asleep, or that I am just carrying extra tension in my face, especially in my face and my neck, I've been learning how to relax my face. And I'm being dead serious. Like, so I'm in bed and I'll feel like, oh, I can't sleep. And then I'll just go, why don't you try that thing where you relax your face? And I just soften like all the muscles in my face and especially my neck. And I'm actually fascinated by how my head re-falls onto the pillow. So what it's made me think about is I wonder how tense I am without knowing it all the time, you know, like,
yeah.
And I know people who are into this, like they're super into it, like maybe yoga people or meditation people or whatever, but I was wondering if you've ever had this experience. Cause literally I'll be like, oh, and I'll just like let my teeth like kind of unclench.
Yeah.
And my jaw sort of sag and my neck kind of just re-hit the pillow. It's actually really fascinating. And so I'm thinking especially of people who like have a hard time falling asleep. And I just wonder if they're not, this is a weird thing to say. I wonder if they're not trying hard enough, meaning why don't you just let go of all the stuff that is not strictly in your mind, but actually in your body and see what happens if your head actually just gets heavy on the pillow. I don't know who that's for. I know I wanted to tell it to somebody.
Relax.
I decided to tell it to you on this podcast.
Yeah.
But yeah.
When I was going through labor classes, basically, like kind of just like training, mostly it was about how to take care of your body while you're pregnant and then how to prepare your body for labor. And I did Fun fact, I don't know if I've shared this story. I did an all natural labor. Did you know that about me?
Yeah, I've heard that story before.
Yeah. So I prepared to labor without any sort of drugs and intervention. Mm-hmm. And that was a very personal decision. I 100% respect everyone and their choices that make the most sense for them. The reason why I did is that I connect so much with my body. As you have listened to this podcast before, you know that I'm an athlete. I'm embodying mm-hmm. that. I say that tongue in cheek when I say I'm an athlete, mm-hmm. That is just how I connect with my body. And I realized that if I was to get an epidural, I wouldn't have access to the lower half of my body and I would probably feel pretty out of control and powerless. So I wanted to be able to have access to my legs. So, when I was in this class, they would go around and Ryan's job, I think the methodology is called the husband led childbirth. And the methodology is that he is there strictly. I know it's interesting. That. Yeah. Strictly to help me to recognize and realize where I'm holding tension. And so what we would do is throughout the day in preparation of like months leading up is that he would just tap a part of my body. So he might like tap my shoulder and I bring my awareness to my shoulder and I think about just releasing whatever tension I'm holding. So his job was to recognize where I'm holding tension in my body. And the idea is that if you can be fully relaxed and stress-free, that you will be able to labor easier. So we practiced this whole idea. And for, I would say months before we had Holden, he would go around and just tap different parts of my body, which just brought my awareness to you're holding tension like in your jaw.
Butt and tap your boobs and tap your
Yeah. It's weird how much tension I held in my vagina. Can you imagine? You tapped it all the time. You're welcome for that.
Meanwhile, Rebecca, when Mary was being born, she's our number two. When we called to tell the hospital we were on our way in, we were like, we're headed over there. She was like, go ahead and order the epidural. Like before we left our house.
Yeah.
She's like, call the anesthesiologist right now because it's ready happening. For my, yeah,
that's right. I am one half of a centimeter dilated and I am ready to be numbed and not feel a thing, please.
Do you know that she went during Abby's birth, she got an epidural and went from 2 centimeters to 9 centimeters while she was asleep.
That is so from amazing. 2 to 9
while she was asleep because she was so tense and afraid and scared that it took this agent, this numbing agent and then the actual sleep and her body finally said, okay, I can do this now.
Right. We can do this. Yeah. It's interesting how much growth. Okay, so we'll weave this in, but like how much growth you can have when you are not in a state of perpetual tension or fear. Mm-hmm. Fear is such a huge factor in childbirth that it's all about being able to relieve your fear and give you the confidence to know that your body is doing exactly what it is intended to do. And if you fully believe in that, then you can be calm and relaxed and you allow yourself to expand the way that it needs to expand. So
there's probably a relationship metaphor in there somewhere.
Probably, but we're not going to touch that because today we're more entertainment than information.
Well, not necessarily, because actually the first question that came in is kind of right in this neighborhood.
All right.
This lady says, I'm working on some stuff, but I wanted to ask you a question.
Okay.
My husband is sure he's one and done regarding having more children. We already have a 3-year-old. Logically, I can get on board with this, but I'm struggling emotionally with it. We always planned to have 2 kids, but now it's looking like we won't. What advice do you have for couples making huge compromises for the sake of the marriage, whether it's children, career, moving, traveling, etc.? I'm also curious to hear Laura's take on being a family of 3, if she would be open to discussing.
Okay.
What do you got?
The answer is yes, I am open to discussing, but I want to talk about question number 1 first. This is a real challenge and something that I've experienced with couples where when we talk about sort of like these unsolvable problems or even, you know, like these decisions that break up relationships, I know that affairs don't break up relationships. We know that couples can overcome affairs and they can end up being better. We know that there are things like addiction where couples can come out on the other side of addiction and they're better for it. Like the relationship grows and they're better for it. I have found that there really is sort of these issues that you can't necessarily compromise on in relationships. And one of them is whether or not to have kids or whether or not to have another child. That is one that I have seen couples struggle with more than I would say any other unsolvable or uncompromisable issue. So way to throw and start off with the hardest one, Zach. Thanks. I appreciate that.
Well, I think, I do and I don't agree with you here. Like,
okay.
Number one, yes, if it is part of your core value set that you do not want to have children and you are starting a relationship with someone who is part of their core value set, they do want to have children.
Yeah.
That is an area that is irreconcilable. The key being that it's part of your core value set. Here we're talking about a family that kind of had this idea that they were going to have two kids, then they had one, and then they got more information and more data. And he's thinking, you know, I think I'm done. And she's thinking, that wasn't the deal. I don't know what to do. You're not suggesting that they can't find a way forward there, are you?
I mean, I've seen couples that haven't been able to find a way forward where one person is saying, I absolutely will not go forward in life without having a second child. And the other person says, I absolutely will not have another child. But I will tell you that I find that if the relationship is rocky to begin with, then this is an out for some folks. That it's a, kind of like a non-negotiable for some people. Whether or not to have another kid is a non-negotiable. I do think that you can find a way forward and you can compromise and you can have great conversation. You can readjust your expectations and your future together if you're in a good place in your relationship. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying that this has to break the marriage. I just have seen it be one of those topics where it is a non-negotiable for many people and they choose family or they choose child over relationship.
Mm-hmm. Well, this gal seems a little more open to the idea that she can meet her husband in his kind of rigid space. What I would offer her is that, is to imagine that it actually is a negotiation. If she has this dream of two children or more, and he's like, no, I'm one and done, that represents something for him and it represents something for her. For her, it might represent, you know, expansive family, or it might represent joy, or it might represent actual connection, or, you know, some theory that you may have about the damage that only children have or whatever. For him, it may represent something like peace or security or financial stability or predictability, you know, and I think you can achieve those things independent of the thing you're compromising on. Like, what I would wonder about is what she can ask him for as a trade-off, which doesn't have to be another human being. It can be, can we invest in church? Can we invest in more time with our extended family? Can we make sure to achieve, to go on some of these adventures that I feel like this bigger family would represent. I'm not sure what is at the heart of the question, but I do think that if you're going to say no to something, in this case, a second child, it's reasonable to expect you to say yes to something else, something else significant, particularly if it represents a major part of your partner's dream. But talk a little bit about just being a family of three. What's that like for you? Like, I know what it's like for you, but it's not bad. Yeah. I mean, you guys seem to have a fine time. Yeah.
Yeah. And we actually, I came from a family of two. My husband kind of was raised as an only child of his mother. He has other siblings, but he is his mother's only child. So he was raised for a pretty solid amount of time as an only child. And I think the intention or like the thought process is we're probably going to end up having more than one kid. And then we had Holden. And I will tell you with full certainty that we felt very complete. It was something, and I'm so grateful for this because without that sense of knowing for the two of us and without the two of us both feeling the same way of we are very complete as a family, it would have been a struggle if my husband said, I don't feel complete. I want to have more children. Then it would have been more of a conversation, but it we had full certainty when we had Hootie that we felt pretty darn complete. And people have asked us many times along the way, like, how do you feel? And I will tell you that we got some pushback from family members that were saying, this isn't fair to Holden for him to be an only child. It's not fair for you to keep us from having like grandchildren or other family members.
Yeah. It's like, about Rudy, you.
But
yeah.
People are very opinionated when it comes to what you do with your family and how you raise your family. But we were just kind of like, you know what? We feel pretty good about this, but I will tell you what's underneath, like the dream that we have is that we want to be the safe harbor, the safe place that other kids feel comfortable coming over and that we have energy and resources to give to others. And because we only have one kiddo, we have a lot of energy and resources to give to him, but we really love the idea of having, as kids especially get a little bit older and have a little bit more independence, that we are like the house where kids come over and we feed them healthy food. They know they always have a place to stay, and feel warm and secure there. But I think that's probably the best response that I can give you is that we just had an intuition, like just an internal knowing that we were done as a family.
Yeah, I dig it.
And we love it. We fly all three of us in a row. The travel is very easy.
That's important. Yep.
It's one hotel room. We all still fit uncomfortably in one king bed for now. So, yeah.
Right on.
Yep.
All right.
All right. Next question. Hold on. This is one that just recently came in.
Zach,
yes. How have you changed as a partner since you first got together with Rebecca? So you guys have been together for how many years?
I did not expect this question. I haven't planned. We got together in, 1995. We met in 1995.
And you were how old?
22.
Mm-hmm.
So how have I changed? I mean, that's over half my life. And
as a partner, changed.
No, I know, but like that's over half my life, which means I've literally grown up. I grew up, between 22 and 50. And so I've grown a lot just by actually having life experiences. I think the two major things I would say that have been part of my change is, number one, I got really, really serious about my defensiveness.
Yeah. We've heard about that.
She kind of let me know without any hesitation or reservation that the marriage was not going to last if I didn't. And that was probably about 10 years into our relationship. So I'm like 32 at that point, maybe.
Can I ask a question about that? Cause you've said that before, and I'm really curious because I have couples that come to my practice where they're complaining to their partners all the time. Mm-hmm. This is not acceptable. I don't like this about our relationship or how you're showing up in the relationship. Yeah. And there is usually like a turning point where people will either say, you're right, I'm ready to work on this. Why was it that you heard her at that moment? Because I guarantee that Rebecca was complaining about your defensiveness for months and months and months before hit you. Yeah. So why was it that moment that stands out in your mind? Was it that it was like filled with like an ultimatum or was it that you were in a space to actually hear it and make a change? I'm just wondering why it stuck.
So I don't think I've ever been asked that question before. I really appreciate it. It's, I don't know, man. We had just had our first baby. It was kind of the period of that. We had been through some pretty significant, turnstiles. I've been using the phrase turnstiles a lot. You kind of go through different turnstiles and each of them had represented deeper commitment to or like investment in the relationship. So I think I had enough awareness of the sunk cost into the relationship. And then also what I would lose if she followed through. I think in that story or in that era, it's the only time in our relationship there was ever an incident of physical violence. And it was when she hit me on the head with a hairbrush. Mm. And I don't cling to that story. I don't have a lot of feeling about it. I'm just sort of putting myself in that place again. But for Rebecca to snap like that, to go into like that degree. I mean, again, it's pretty mild. I mean, I was standing next to her and she just like whacked me on the head with that hairbrush, but it hurt.
Yeah.
And it was really, really out of character for her. So I knew that she was at the end of her rope. And yeah. I had a choice. And I think I just had too much kind of pride and love and investment in our relationship to not respond to that. And so I just started the work, you know, and I had lost a couple of friendships and I was, you know, estranged from my dad at that time. And I mean, there was plenty of evidence that I was in fact a hard guy to be in relationship with. Yeah. And so I just kind of started working on it. And people were like, oh, what'd you do? And it took me like 15 years or so, you know, to get to the point where I think now probably like my mid-40s, I was like, you know, I think I've got a good handle on this. I think I have an awareness around this that is, you know, gonna be helpful.
I have a follow-up question.
Yeah.
When your partner says, I need you to change in order for this relationship to work, and she's at the end of her rope, and you decided, okay, like enough's enough. I'm motivated and I'm ready for change. Defensiveness is one of those things that happens a lot internally. And I think a lot of change in general happens internally in relationships where your partner doesn't get the benefit of seeing these outward behaviors that can confirm, yes, in fact, I'm working on this thing and I want you to know because it's important to you. So I am kind of wondering, how did Rebecca know Zach heard me? This is important to him. It's important to me. And he's making this change.
Yeah. I mean, the story that we often tell about that is that we immediately got into therapy. I got into therapy weekly. Where the two of us got into therapy weekly. She was in therapy already. So we were in three appointments a week. We basically mortgaged our house or took out a home equity line to pay for therapy. Yeah. And so there was data, like there was accountability and there was like what I would call ethical actions. It's on this little menu of trust building.
Cool.
The ethical action was, you know, actually doing work and becoming accountable to a process. And, you know, I had to make some life changes that were pretty specific around my job and around some boundaries that I had and some, you know, other kind of other things. And I think it just was part of like, there was sort of this, I mean, I was talking to a client yesterday and he's in the same spot as me. They're literally 32. And his wife was like, I'm not doing this anymore. And I was like, dude, you gotta do it all. You gotta do everything. You gotta go to therapy. You gotta call Matt Frey, who we interviewed last week. I said,
he is amazing.
You gotta sign up for this course. You gotta, you know, talk to me. You gotta, you know, like you gotta plan a vacation. You gotta do everything,
Right.
And I think there's something about that. And if I were to say the second part, which I've said a million times in the last couple of years, is this idea of when I got sober, it was kind of the same thing. I came to the edge of a way of being on the planet and knew that it wasn't sustainable anymore. And I just started doing whatever it took. So I got a sponsor, I got an AA, I ratcheted up my therapy. I made some choices in my, you know, personal life, you know, and I think nothing changes if nothing changes. And so when somebody asks you to change, you have to actually change. And that requires you to change the way you spend your time and your money and your energy. And I'm also a big fan of saying, you know, you got to do that for you. Certainly the second time, I would not say that I quit drinking because of Rebecca. I mean, she was certainly a factor in there, but I realized that I had to do that for me.
Yeah.
And then it was the me that was good for the relationship. I didn't do it for her, you know? Mm-hmm. So,
I mean, I think at points in your life, people are going to ask for you to show up or do something different. And we may have enough of gusto or determination from that external push to get the wheels going. But if you want sustainable change, you're right. It has to come from inside. Yeah. It has to be your why. That's a whole like Simon Sinek thing. But I do think that you can make changes because your partner says, I need you to do this. I need you to do 100%. Better.
Yeah.
You can make those changes. But if it's going to be sustainable, you have to latch on to why you're doing it for you. The other thing I heard you say,
sorry, go ahead. Yeah, sorry.
The other piece that I heard you say is that you are with this couple that you're working with is that you have to pull every single lever. You can't just rely on going to therapy with Zach. You have to read the book. You have to make the dates. You have to go on the vacation. You have to all of these things. Pull every single lever. And if it's going to produce 1% better impact, at least you have seven levers pulled. Now you've got 7% increase in better.
another metaphor for that is, that I use a lot is what, that I threw all the spaghetti on the wall. I just threw a whole pot of spaghetti on the wall and just kind of decided to see what sticks, you know, and some of it will fall off. Some of it won't be helpful, but I think throwing the spaghetti on the wall is the work. And then when the stuff sticks, you lean into that part of it. We came in here with a whole bunch of questions from the internet that I think we wanted to answer, but we ended up talking about ourselves for an hour. But let's commit to extending this AMA for another week on the internet, on the Instagram, and we'll dive in right away. I won't tell any bad jokes. And
that was a solid one.
Yeah,
it's been
thanks.
1 week.
There are some really cool questions that I'm actually looking forward to answer, and I do appreciate the questions about Laura and I think I'm honored that you want to know what it's like for us to be in a family of three, or that you want to know what it's like to change personally. So thank you for those questions. And then, we'll lean into the more generic ones next time.
So how do we get their responses? You can email them to us, info@marriagetherapyradio.com.
Yep.
And just say, here's a question for the AMA. Ask me anything. Could be anything. You can ask me about my favorite Indian recipe. I don't care what it is. It can be marriage related. It can be from a future or present or past podcast. Or you can find us on the Instagram at marriagetherapyradio.com. Yeah.
Right on.
All right. Well, let's land this plane. And I want you to know I'm wearing a full suit today because
nice.
I have all of my clothes, which I have not had access to for the last 9 months. And my husband keeps saying, you look so nice. I'm like, this is what happens when you're not wearing three sweatpants. I got all my clothes back. It's pretty great. Okay.
Right,
let's land and okay. I'll see you tomorrow.
All right. Right on.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Marriage Therapy Radio. We will continue our Ask Me Anything segment. Again, this does not necessarily have to be relationship related, though we will find a way to weave it in. But you can send that direct message us on Instagram. You can send it through an email, info@marriagetherapyradio.com. Thanks so much for all of your time and your attention, making your relationship better today than it was yesterday.